Hello, and welcome to the first ever episode of Cornwall Woman. My name's Karen Pirrie, and I live in the very far west of Cornwall, in a little cottage by the sea. So we're kicking off with a bit of a spooky one, featuring Britain's first ever tax-paying witch, Cassandra Latham-Jones. And she works alongside Letitia Latham-Jones and their black cat, Clutterbuck, who is no shirker.
Clutterbuck's very good at harvesting certain things. He brings in dead frogs that we can dry out and store, and sometimes bees can get trapped in the conservatory and die in there, and you can store them. Clutterbuck even brought in a baby bat once that was dead, so if he caught that live, it must have been fast. So we ground up the wings of the bat because they can be used for good luck, things like that.
They live here in St. Burien. The village is close to some of the area's most important pagan sites. There's a couple of stone circles, lots of standing stones. So I'm off to meet them now, in their cottage, which is called the Doll's House. Wish me luck. Hello,
Hello.
Letitia.
Come in.
Hi. So, I'm now in the Doll's House with Cassandra Latham-Jones and Letitia Latham-Jones. The cuckoo clock's ticking in the background. The wind is howling down the chimney, and we might occasionally hear the gentle purring of Clutterbuck, who's the black cat, of course, who's happily sitting on Cassandra's knee at the moment. Cassandra, you are actually Cornish, is that right?
I was born down here, or what I like to say is I was made down here, made in Cornwall. But shortly after birth, I was adopted away and was brought up elsewhere in the country. And once my adoptive parents died, once I got hold of the paperwork, found out where I came from, and I came back home. Been here ever since.
So how old were you when you found out that you were actually Cornish?
I was in my 20s.
And what drew you here? Because it's just sort of chance in a way that you were born here. What made you actually want to come back?
If you're an adopted person, you always want to know your roots. And I had visited Cornwall before and very, very much felt a connection with down here. And I didn't like where I was. I felt like a stranger in a strange land. It felt alien to me.
And you worked for Rowena Cade for a while.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, what was she like?
Unique.
This is the founder of the Minack Theatre.
It is indeed, yes. In a way, she was just like the grandmother I never knew. She was a hell of a character, where you'd have to be to do what she did. Fiercely independent. And I did all I could to maintain that independence while I cared for her as a nurse companion towards the end of her life. I really miss her still.
Letitia, you were brought up in quite a strict religious family, weren't you?
Yes, it was a cult.
It was a Christian family, wasn't it? But a very strict one.
Yes, Christmas is looked on as pagan, and anything with pagan roots, they didn't celebrate. So I got out of it when I was 16. I actually asked to be what they call disfellowshipped. But then when you do that, anyone you've known all your life cuts you off, doesn't speak to you. So then I had to choose between my family and my own life. And I got married at 17 years old to get away from home as well. So, you know, because life was unbearable by then. I knew about, there was a spiritualist church around the corner from where my parents' church was. And they'd always said that that was an evil place. And the people there were lovely. And what I liked about the spiritualist side of things was they said it didn't matter what you believe because it's spirit that joins everyone together. So I started to look into, I attended workshops, I started to do psychic development circles. And then I discovered that I could, once I'd opened myself up to that, I could actually communicate with spirit. So I do work as a spirit medium quite a bit while Cassandra does the tarot now. So that's all incorporated into it. But the thing that made me sort of look towards the pagan side of stuff was when I was brought up in the religion, I was sort of, oh, you know, talk to God, he's there for you, make him your friend. But you just couldn't see him. So there was nothing you could focus on to connect with that spirit. And when I went to college to do beauty therapy in my 30s, and I'd come out every night exhausted from the day, and just before I got into my car, I'd see the moon shining down on me, and she used to follow me all the way home, and she watched over me like a mother. And then, of course, that sort of drew me into wanting to find out more about the witchcraft side of things.
Cassandra, when did you first start becoming attracted to paganism?
Well, actually, it was quite interesting just listening to Letitia there talking about the moon, because I had very similar sort of almost like a Damascus experience myself, because I had a very difficult upbringing. So my early part of my life, I was pretty screwed up. And I remember sitting in a place that I was longing to get away from, looking up at the full moon through the window and thinking, there's got to be more to life than this. And I've always been entranced by the moon. I mean, less charitable folks would, yes, say, well, she's a lunatic. And I suppose to some extent, yes, I'd agree with that. That's when I started to look into other beliefs. I'd had really negative experiences with Christianity as well. I'm not saying all Christianity is like this, because we have a fine example in our own village right now of a Christian minister who is all heart, and she's fabulous. So we're talking about slightly off the wall, cultish type Christianity here. And my experience of that was so awful, I began to start thinking, well, they keep railing against pagans and things like, and there's a cuckoo clock, pagans and things like that. That's when I actually started to sort of gazing at the moon and wondering, there's got to be more to life than this. You were asking about similarities. Well, we both used to have ex-husbands that were policemen. That's a bit weird. Not the same one, we hasten to add.
Letitia, you're not from Cornwall. What attracted you to come down here?
Well, I'm a Kentish maid. I'd come to Cornwall from the age of 5. The foyer was the first place we stayed at, but we was always based around those areas, like, you know, Polperro, Mifigisi. You know, even after leaving home, I carried on having holidays in Cornwall when I could, but I wanted to eventually move down here. When I first moved here, I really wanted to get into the magical side of here, because even though I was Wiccan trained in Kent, it wasn't old enough for me. I knew there was something older. And that was what I found when I came here. And then it was just someone phoned me while I was living in Indian Queens and said, would you like to become train up to be a teaser for an obios? Because we're looking for somebody to train up in Penzance. And I said I'd give it a go, because I'd had history in Morris dancing in Cairns. I'd known of Cassandra because I'd been to pagan conferences down here where she was an organiser. So I'd seen her around, and I was so surprised when they said, right, we'll give Cassandra your phone number. And I said, well, she's a teaser. And they said, yeah, she'll be training you up. So it's through that interview that we, you know, got to know how much we had in common. And then Cassandra told me about the magical side of things and how she needed to hand that on. And I said, well, I'll have a go. Then when my husband retired from the police, he just seemed to want a different life to what I wanted, and then said he wanted a divorce. So then, you know, that happened, and it was just like everything. Cassandra did warn me that if you move to Cornwall, your life can be turned upside down because of the topsy-turvy energies. So it certainly did that.
Can you just explain for those people who don't know what a teaser is?
A teaser is someone that guides the obios, because obviously the rider in the os has got restricted vision. They can only see through a narrow sort of face hole. And you need to dance with them as well, because that's what you do. It's like a teasing dance for them to respond to.
And the obios. Cassandra, can you explain what the obios is?
Well, obioses, you'll find them all over Britain and Europe, basically. What the majority of them seem to have emerged from are old midwinter begging traditions, where everything at that time of year, round about midwinter, was a very tough time for the poorer people, farm labourers and very low-income people. It was generally considered to be a sort of topsy-turvy time around that time between Halloween and Yule. And if you look back in all sorts of folklore and myths and legends, you'll find lots of examples of that, where people used to dress in disguises and generally create mayhem. And in West Cornwall in particular, there are some traditions around the Land's End area where that definitely happened, where people cross-dressed, they dressed as beasts and different things. There's a whole pantomime aspect associated with this stuff. There's been a resurgence in the last 20, 30 years to bring back these old festivals, because they're good community events. It's to bring the communities together. And there's a great sense of, there's only one word to describe it, is they're abreactive. That means that what happens and what people are observing has a direct emotional response on people. It's letting your hair down, it's kicking over the traces, it's getting stuff out of your system. And incidentally, getting a little bit of money and ale and cake to be going on with. And I was there in the early days of building the Glowan Festival in Penzance, which is midsummer. And there were documentations of an old os that used to come out midwinter. So the idea was we'd bring out this old os, referred to as Penglaze, for the Glowan celebrations. And it was there as a sort of enigmatic figure that would just appear in the streets and startle and beguile people. But the old midwinter osses, they were specifically with skulls, osses skulls on poles with a costume draped over the man carrying it.
You've got a couple here, haven't you?
Yes, we have.
The horse's skull with this sort of incredible mane and shells on its nose, grinning at me from the corner.
And I became the teaser for this os, because as Letitia said, it's the idea is you are the person between the crowd and the os. So the os responds to you and you respond to the crowd as well. So you're this liminal character that is neither one thing or the other. So there's this cross-dressing sort of thing going on as well. There are exceptions that are slightly different. So if you go to Padstow, for instance, or Minehead, you have the May Day osses. Now, they're specifically for fertility purposes. They would go around chasing young maids, and they say if they caught any maids underneath the skirts of the os, then they would be fall pregnant within a year. The skull osses or pole osses, mast osses, they represent death and rebirth, which fits in with the time of the year when they come out, because it's the death of summer and the birth of winter and vice versa. And we're about to bring these osses out at Boss Castle at the All Hallows Gathering, or the Dark Gathering, as it's now become known as, which we organise. And it's fantastic, I have to say. It's just grown from about 40 people back in 2014. And now, I mean, last year we had 1,200 people to Boss Castle, tiny village.
But it's got that incredible Museum of Witchcraft, hasn't it?
Exactly, and that's where it happens, is outside the Museum of Witchcraft and Magic. And it's great to see all those people just totally animated. And you think, wow, we brought that about, didn't we? And it's amazing to watch.
The Kavanaugh case has just recently happened in the United States, and there's been a hashtag going around, hashtag Believe Women, which made me think about witches in history and how they, in many cases, haven't been believed and been punished for their beliefs. Do you think there's any resonance or any connection between the way outspoken women have been treated by society?
Very definitely, yes. In fact, only the other day on Facebook, you sent me that cartoon where it had a picture of a woman being swum as a witch. And basically, if she sunk, she was innocent. And if she floated, she was guilty. So damned if you do, damned if you don't. And then the other part of the cartoon was, she says it happened to her, but we all know what women are like to that effect.
Yeah, sort of modern day, wasn't it, the other bit? Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff is not called witch hunt for nothing. A lot of the people who were persecuted as witches during the witch craze weren't witches at all, but were simply isolated, vulnerable or outspoken women that men, for whatever purposes, did not wish to believe them.
You set yourself up as the wise woman of St. Berrien. What kind of a job is that?
Oh, very busy one. Basically, there is a knee-jerk reaction to the word witch, although I do use it, because you start talking to people about being a wise woman or a cunning woman, and people go, what? What's that? They kind of more understand the word witch, but there is a connotations to the word witch that can be confusing, shall we say. However, a wise woman is someone who basically works for their community to help solve various problems for people. I don't wave a magic wand and make them all go away, you know, if only. But it's not a case of even if only, because that would disempower people. What I try and do is get them to find a way to do it for themselves. I'm an ex-nurse, and also I'm a trained counsellor, so I have skills at my fingertips that I can help a lot of people. And that's where the tarot comes in, because I use that as a sort of diagnostic tool, if you like. So often people come to us when they are desperate. That's fine. I haven't got a problem with that, because that does mean they've usually tried everything else first and they are willing to change, to heal, because often it's to do with being stuck in some sort of negative loop, which we all, you know, have suffered from some way or another in the past. I think any counsellor worth their salt, so to speak, needs to have been through an emotional mill themselves in order to help people through that particular process. It's not something you can just learn by theory. You've got to have active experience of what it's like, I believe, to truly help people and be to truly empathise with them too.
Letitia, can you give me an idea of some of the things that you do as a wise woman for people who live around here? What problems do people come to you with?
Well, I do a lot of charm work with the fertility charms. I've had a lot of success. I even had one woman who, she tried and she'd had miscarriages and wasn't successful. And both her and her husband were on different sort of shift work, so they rarely got together. And so what we did is, after looking at planetary activity, I gave them a specific time to try for a child, when it had to be during an afternoon, because that was the only shift where they were actually together. So I said to them, don't do anything until that day, and then after that day, don't do anything after, just on that day. And so they did. So I worked here during the afternoon as well, doing the spell work. And then about 6 weeks later, she contacted me and said, I'm pregnant and the baby's due on Halloween. And she had a beautiful little girl.
Gosh.
So, yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Can you give me some examples, Cassandra, of some of the things you've helped people to achieve?
The ones that stick in my mind are really quite simple things. Like there was a child once who kept having recurring nightmares, and her mother brought her along. She's only about 8, 9, something like that. People will frown upon this now, considering what's happened, but hey, it worked at the time. I told her to get one of those helium balloons, one that she really liked, and to buy some luggage labels and to attach a label to it and say, you write on it whatever you want to write, but say, I want these to go away. And they went up top of a hill, and I said, when you let it go, you watch that balloon until you can't see it anymore. It's to get them to stop and to focus on something, so their minds are totally focused on that and not clattering around worrying about other things. And that's where a lot of the magic comes from, is to get people to do just that. And that worked incidentally, completely. But then children have a very clear understanding about magic. They don't sort of start poo-pooing things. They have direct access to magic, if you like, and it's later they grow out of that ability to just plug into it.
Is that because we're taught to be more cynical as we get older?
I think our rational minds overcomplicate things. Certainly as adults, when I'm teaching, because we give workshops about how to learn wisecraft, it's like, yes, your adult part of you, if you like, your brain understands all sorts of things, like when's a good time to do this, about learn about correspondences, the different tides, energies, so that you get the energy to work to its greatest ability and its greatest effectiveness. But at the same time, in order to make a charm, for instance, you know what bits would be good, but you let the child part of your mind play with it and just see what you come up with.
Have people ever asked you to do horrible things or unpleasant things that you've refused to do?
Yes. In a nutshell. We do have a code of ethics. They're very simple. There's only 3 parts to it. Full confidentiality is assured, because people are disclosing all sorts to you, and they must have that confidence that it goes absolutely no further. The second one is that we do not perform acts of magic without the recipient's express permission and knowledge. And then thirdly, we do not perform acts of magic which knowingly will harm others. When you talk to a client, you've got to remember you're only hearing one side of a particular story. And you have to bear in mind there may be other components here that you have no idea about. And that's where tarot reading comes in handy, because often it brings up stuff that people aren't mentioning that you think, and then you mention it to them and they go, oh, you're particularly good at that. Picking out bits that people aren't mentioning.
Next to us is a dresser that's got probably at least 100 little bottles in it. This is your spell cabinet, I suppose?
Yeah. What you do is you dry out specific herbs and store them in bottles. You write the date on them when you collected them. And that's the same with like different kinds of water for blessing objects as well. That I've got sea water for when I work with the sea. Water from holy wells.
So we've got Clutterbuck, your cat, sitting on your knee, Cassandra. You don't refer to him as a pet, but as a familiar. What does that mean?
Clutterbuck belongs to me, and he is my familiar. He's very spiritually aware. Whenever we work, he will come in and he takes great interest in the altar and what's going on, you know, and with my charms he will touch them with his paw or he'll kiss them or, you know, he'll put his like approval on them as well. So he's a very curious cat, but he also is a good presence as well. And there's also Clutterbuck's very good at harvesting certain things. He brings in dead frogs that we can dry out and store, and sometimes bees can get trapped in the conservatory and die in there, and you can store them. Clutterbuck even brought in a baby bat once that was dead, so if he caught that live it must have been fast. So we ground up the wings of the bat because they can be used for good luck, things like that. And then obviously we've got incenses for different magical work we do, you know, ones for Sabbaths, ones for full moon, different deities, and also, you know, protection incenses, hand fastings and last rites, all that kind of thing. And also I've got quite two large bowls of shells in there as well, of different types of shells that I use for spells and things too.
Can you tell me, Cassandra, this is, obviously there's loads, there's Boscar Noon and loads of pagan relics around here.
Yeah, I'm one of them. Sorry. Couldn't resist that. Well, yes, there's about 2,500 megaliths crammed into this tiny little peninsula down here. So certainly what we call primitive man thought a hell of a lot of this place right at the end of the world, so to speak. They loved and honoured what are called liminal spaces, the places between things, and Land's End is a liminal place, as is Finisterre and Brittany and anything on the edge, really, and this is why Halloween, or Samhain as we call it, that's seen as a liminal time too. It's a time where some say the veil is thin, and the spirit world comes very close. So in a sense, it will always be a pagan-like environment, but it has attracted a lot of pagans, with a capital P, so to speak. If you look at Cornwall on a map, it looks a bit like a Christmas stocking and all the nuts are gathered in the toe. And that's very true.
Nuts fall to the bottom.
Yes, they do. And here we all are.
Now, I want to ask this question of both of you. Do you have particular favourite places in Cornwall, or places that you are quite potent for you?
Well, mine would be Boscar Noon, with a close second being Carnuni, which is the ancient settlement not that far away that has a fugu, which is a subterranean passage. Plus, they got... have you ever been to...
I have.
You've seen the beehive,
yes,
hut, as they call it.
Yes,
there.
Incredibly well preserved.
It is. We've been there at night and it's amazingly potent, isn't it? But also so is Boscar Noon.
Yeah.
First time I took you there, I took you there without a torch. So it was pitch black.
I just, because the Kingstone leans in the centre, and in the darkness, Cassandra just left me on my own there, and while she wandered around, and I laid against the Kingstone and I put my hands out and I could feel something spinning around the circle, and I could almost rest my hands on it, you know, and stayed like that for a long time. My arms were supported by something. But for me, it's obviously to do with the sea. Senan Cove, I work a lot there, because the beach is large, so no matter who is there, you can always find a bit where you're on your own. Penberth Cove I love as well. And Tintagel and Boscastle favourites too, so.
And do you think you could be living the life that you're living now somewhere other than Cornwall?
I have been, you know, on my visits back to Kent, I did go to Brighton for the day, and I went out onto the pier and I couldn't feel the spirits there, because it wasn't the ocean. It's down here, you're right next to the ocean, and that's where the spirits are.
What about you, Cassandra?
Definitely not. After I left Rowena Cade, I mean, I bought this cottage while I was still looking after Rowena. And in fact, she built the grate that's in my fireplace now. So when Rowena died, I moved to the village. And there was just something about the place. I don't know what it was exactly, but it just felt right to be here. And every time I kind of moved away, because I did for a short period of time, to do my degree at Dartington. And I was just aching to get home all the time. And it's like, the best way to describe it is it feels like a taproot's gone down here. And I don't want to ever be anywhere else. And I will stay here till I die and probably haunt the place afterwards.
Oh, that was so interesting. Thank you so much, Cassandra and Letitia. And it was lovely to meet the clearly very contented Clutterbuck the cat. If you want to find out more about Cassandra's work, she's written a book and it's called The Village Witch. I asked Letitia if she would do a spell for the podcast, so now I'm feeling very optimistic. If you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe, and I'd really appreciate it if you could rate the podcast as well, so that more people can find out about Cornwall Woman. Future episodes include my adventures with the lovely and wise Rachel Lambert, who took me on a seaweed foraging trip. So I can now say with some authority that seaweed is actually delicious. And we also have the wonderful writer and storyteller Jane Pugh, who's got the most fantastic laugh. And her take on single life is really quite uplifting. I look forward to sharing it with you soon.